Hello and welcome to the Overthrow podcast. This is a six-part podcast done in conjunction with PhD. It's a collaboration between PhD and Eat Big Fish, looking at how a challenger mindset can help brands accelerate into this new or renewed world. And it's largely based on a book that was written by Malcolm Devoy and myself last year called Overthrow 2. And over the six different episodes, we'll be looking at kind of what is the changing landscape for challengers. We'll be looking at what the changing investment kind of opportunity and landscape is, particular areas like drama, like fame, like collaboration that seem to be important. And even coming into perhaps looking at what a challenger mindset means for legacy brands. You know, the point is obviously that challenger is not about being kind of necessarily small or necessarily number two. It's actually about a mindset that perhaps more of us need to apply more often and particularly in the current environment. So this is the very first one, and I'm joined today by my co-conspirator on the book, actually, Malcolm Devoy, who is the Chief Strategy Officer for PhD EMEA. Welcome, Malcolm, to the first podcast.
Thanks very much, Adam. Good to be here.
So tell me a little bit about where you are, what you can see, you know, tell me a little bit about the kind of the environment you're in at the moment and you know, what's your perspective?
Well, I guess my personal environment, like many others, confined to the home, making everything virtual in order to go about daily life within work. I think from a professional perspective, my view is one of rapidly changing emotions. I see huge fluctuations between optimism and despair, and of course, rapid changes of behavior as those emotions fluctuate as well. So I think, you know, both personally at home, trying to manage a situation with kids in the house and keep them buoyed and optimistic, but then also playing a similar role at work as well. We're trying to understand the how we navigate through this entire period, and of course, what things might look like when we get to the other side.
Yeah, it is very intense, isn't it? I share that sense of vividness about everything that one feels. There was somebody sent me that quote from Chekhov the other day about any idiot can face a crisis. It's this day-to-day living that gets me, that wears me out. And I lost that sense of the kind of stimulation for, you know, as you say, for good and bad, that being in the middle of this gives one. It's an incredibly kind of innovating and perversely exciting time, actually. I thought I would feel kind of pretty much continually ground down by it. But actually, I feel that oscillation that you describe between kind of energy and excitement, as well as the occasional looking over the abyss, is very kind of it really kind of drives me.
And I think because no one really knows the answers, we're all trying to figure it out for ourselves. And this goes professionally and personally. So there's no data point or historical reference that we can use to figure out what we should do. So I think it's hugely exciting, nerve-wracking as well, but hugely exciting to figure out how we can define these coming months and potentially years as a result of the situation that we're in right now. So it is a nervous but exciting time.
Tell me a little bit about kind of sort of surprises for you. So we're going to talk in a minute about kind of what's kind of temporary and what's permanent. But what has sort of surprised you that coming out of the last few months about brands or about what you're seeing more generally in the world?
I think I found it quite surprising how quickly some brands are to make knee-jerk reactions. And I know everything is moving quickly and decisions need to be made fast. But I think it has been surprising the kind of decisions that some brands have been making, which I don't necessarily believe are beneficial to the long-term outcome.
Like what? Give me an example.
Well, I think, you know, up until COVID struck, I think within media, we were seeing a natural upweight towards bottom of the funnel activities. And of course, we talk about this in Overthrow and suggest that the challenger brands that we've studied that have dramatic growth don't do this. You know, they focus very much on creative led and brand activity. But of course, what we were seeing was a slight increase towards bottom of the funnel activities. And I think in a situation like right now, I think the opportunity is to be incredibly distinctive and creative. But I think what has been somewhat problematic in some brands is where that is the thing that's been cut. You know, they've focused more, if anything, more on bottom of the funnel activation tactics, when I would say the real opportunity exists right now in upper funnel comms.
I mean, that's fascinating, isn't it? Because I've you know, you see a lot of people talking about the fact that actually, in a sense, this is the time to be useful and practical at this particular stage, and that if there is an opportunity for kind of emotional and creative brand building, that is some way off, you know, at an unspecified point in the future, maybe next year at some point. But your sense is actually, no, this is a real opportunity, and brands should be kind of leaning into that opportunity more than ever before.
Indeed, I think we're going to see quite a polarization of approaches as we exit this phase. You know, we're going to see brands that have focused on efficiency and tried to maintain sales during a very difficult period. And then you're going to see brands that capitalize on an opportunity to draw attention to themselves by virtue of being useful, you know, whether it's providing additional content, whether it's by contributing to the overall effort in some way. But I think we're going to see real creativity. And I think in those brands, we're going to see, you know, certain category behaviors being redefined. So I think there's a massive opportunity for brands to redefine category conventions in their favor. And I think, you know, in 5 years' time, when we look back on this period, I think we're going to be studying the case studies of those brands that changed the dynamics in their favor. I think it's such a crucial period of time that will be the implication.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's a very interesting article by Mary Portis in the FT the other day, the retail guru, talking about what's going to happen to the high street, what's going to happen to retail. And her point really was that what's happening is really an accelerant. I mean, what we're seeing happening in 2 or 3 months or 6 months is effectively just merely an accelerant of what would have happened over a longer period of time. There's just, you know, the average, the unremarkable, the kind of the mush in the middle is going to disappear. But there will still be enormous opportunities, you know, for newer challenges, even in categories as apparently unfashionable as kind of the high street or the mall. And she made this interesting distinction between physics and chemistry. So she said, what I think we're going to lose is brands that have relied on physics, you know, just footfall, size, distribution, presence, without actually understanding chemistry and the importance of the emotional connection with customers and really having something special and differentiating. And actually, it's the chemistry that's going to make the difference about the brands that come out of this and survive. It's a really nice kind of simple distinction, like all really simple kind of binary distinctions. It kind of seems a bit too simple to work, but I loved it and really kind of took to it. I thought it was a really useful kind of thought.
And of course, I think that is the challenge that all brands are going to face as they look forward from this point, which is some things will have changed permanently, some things are only temporary, but of those permanent changes, how can they be a part of it? How can they lead that charge? And like I said, there's no rule book to this. There's no data point that we can go and access in the past and say that's how to do it. Everyone's making it up as they go along. And I think some are going to make it up brilliantly and some might falter. But I think figuring out how to integrate themselves in a useful and compassionate way is going to be a key challenge of brands as we look forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm interested in, when you read commentators on it, I'm interested in the one thing that doesn't seem to have changed is the kind of lack of nuance in those commentaries. It seems to be very binary. It seems to be either everything's changed, this is a whole new world, or actually, don't be so ridiculous, nothing's changed, it'll go back to normal. And people still seem to be taking these very binary positions on things, which are clearly much more nuanced. So you know, you read a report about, so, okay, this is the death of influencers because celebrities have been exposed and it turns out they're all being paid all the time. Who knew? You know, that kind of stuff. And of course, it's not the death of influencers at all. This is a fundamentally kind of human dynamic. I one of my favorite Woody Allen lines is, my one regret in life is that I'm not someone else. And, you know, that's kind of what influencers and a certain kind of aspirational brand and brand imagery is all about. So, of course, they'll come back. They've been influencers for centuries in societies. That's kind of one of the things that we work about. I'm missing that sense of nuance and kind of graduated, more sort of elevated conversation about it all.
I think whenever we look at a graph that's got a line, whenever we see that line drop to zero, we think, you know, that the world has ended for that. But of course, there are explanations for all of those outliers in data points. And I think you're right. There will be many things that return to the way they were before. And there'll be many things that return in fact, even better than they were before. But it will be a turbulent path. And there's a lot of opportunity, I would say, within that to reshape it or re-examine it from a consumer's perspective, to see how it should go or where we might like it to go, rather than just naturally returning to exactly how it was.
Yeah, yours is such an interesting point, that in a time of crisis, what we want is a graph with a line. We want some sense of prediction and clarity and simplicity. Oh, that's the way the world's going to go. And of course, you know, you can't. There's multiple lines being drawn, and some of them are very wavy and some of them might be quite straight, but we won't know yet. And that's a false comfort that we need to stay clear of. And actually, maybe, and perhaps we'll come on to this a bit later on in the podcast, the nature of challenges and the way that they're having to adapt is partly to change the trajectories of the lines that are being drawn for them or apparently drawn from them. So listen, Malcolm, you know, in your kind of position as a CSO for PhD, you're clearly overseeing lots of different kinds of clients from different kinds of categories, and indeed doing a lot of pitching. Well, are you seeing any difference in the kinds of questions that clients are asking of you in pitches now from the kinds of questions they would have asked a year ago?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, I mean, the first thing is, it's great that we are still pitching, and it's great that many brands are still having the vision to look forward, you know, and obviously that's what pitching is all about. It's about changing the direction of travel. And that is still going on. So it's great that brands are still doing that. As far as the questions they're asking us, I'd say within pitches, the questions are still relatively similar to the kinds of questions we were getting in pitches before. But I'd say the big difference is from our existing clients, where they're looking for guidance, feedback, help on determining what the best solution might be, and presenting a business case for why things should or shouldn't be done. Because I think, you know, I mentioned the polarization of approaches before, and I think all brands are asking themselves this one fundamental question, which is, should we stop advertising? And of course, a subsection of that question is, if we continue with a certain amount, what should we prioritize? Is it bottom of the funnel activities? Is it big brand creative activities? And how does that relate to where sales are going to come from if indeed manufacturing or distribution is challenged in this period? So there are a lot of questions really about what on earth do we do in terms of advertising and communications.
So within the media landscape, Malcolm, what kind of changes are you seeing there that you think are most relevant for challenges?
Well, I think, you know, challenges have tended to always have a keener eye for innovation, and not innovation for its own sake, but innovation to draw attention to how a category could be improved. And I think we're seeing that with brands that are struggling for physical presence because people can't access shops or buy in the way that they might normally have done. Brands that have created a virtual version of themselves, I think, are the ones that are being missed slightly less during this period of time. So, you know, ways in which they can bring the experience of the brand and not just the purchasing of the product. Of course, e-commerce has massively picked up during this period of time, but I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about how they bring the character of their brand and their full brand ethos into people's home. So creating that virtual sense. You know, we often talk about when we try and predict the nature of technology and advancements in technology, we talk about abundance and how consumers are moving towards abundance in that they want to be able to access everything they want in real time in frictionless ways. And I think those brands that are trying to push the dynamics of the category and set new ways of interacting with it are, as I said, they're being missed less during this period because they are more available. They are close to that one step of abundance.
So, Malcolm, in Overthrow 2, you'd identified six key kind of behaviours, media behaviours that characterise challenges. How do you think those have changed or evolved, or which are particularly being dialed up or dialed down at the moment in response to the crisis?
Well, the first one we talked about in the book was how challenger brands tend to focus on effectiveness first rather than efficiency. And I think, you know, this crisis has accelerated brands in both directions. I think for the brands that are playing it safe, they've gone even further towards efficiency. So they're cost cutting. They're trying to retain sales levels at the lowest cost, whilst not, you know, perhaps what they might perceive to be wasting big brand budgets when sales aren't available. But I think challenger brands have always been brilliant at focusing on the outcome first. And I think we are seeing brands adapt challenger behavior by accelerating that part, the effectiveness part, which of course requires radically different tactics. It requires big, bold tactics that draw attention to their products and to their brands themselves. And I think creativity is a key driver of that. You know, and just to give an example, this is a relatively small example, but a lovely example of challenger behavior. So IKEA, when they've communicated during this period of lockdown, they haven't gone down the well-trodden route of saying, you know, please stay at home, we support the key workers, which many brands have done, and they've kind of blended into a similar narrative. What they've done is they've been a bit creative in renaming their products in a way that is suitable to a lockdown period. So, you know, they might show a chair and rename it Goalposts or Racing Car or Hair Salon. And I think that is just is such a wonderful little slant on what we can do with creativity here. So they are acknowledging the situation that people are in, they're drawing attention to their product, and they're doing it with such simplicity and creativity that it's having that dramatic standout. And of course, one of those key behaviors that we identified is these challenger brands are outstanding at standing out. And I think taking even small static imagery pieces that can, you know, merge into background because they're not typically emotive channel formats to have static imagery, they've created that standout very, very simply. So I think brands that are putting effectiveness first and concentrating on how they can draw attention to themselves and get disproportionate attention, disproportionate payback, and so on, they're going to do very, very well. And it's the exact opposite, I think, of where many brands are going by going further and further down that efficiency route.
I love that IKEA example. It's brilliant. I didn't come across that. I think that brings us to the end of our first podcast. So thank you very much, Malcolm. Real pleasure doing it with you. I really enjoyed us working together on the book, and really enjoyed the, always enjoy your kind of thinking and kind of provocations. And just wanted to kind of offer a kind of a final thought of my own and then give you a chance to add a final thought of your own. So mine is this, really. I it's about 20 years ago, I interviewed an anthropologist, a cognitive anthropologist called Bob Deutsch in America about the defining spirit of America. What was America in a sentence? And his sentence was, everything is up for grabs all the time. That's what he said defined America. And I am struck by how I think actually that doesn't define America so well anymore, but perhaps does define the situation at the moment for all of us. Everything is up for grabs all the time at the moment. And there's this brief window where actually so many things could go in so many ways. And it's really up to us to bring a challenger mindset to that and plot that trajectory for ourselves. Do you have any kind of thoughts that have struck you that you want to just end off with?
Well, yeah, and that's very nice. And I think perhaps building from that, but looking at it very much from a media perspective, I think one of the recent publications, Orlando Wood's book on Lemon, he made a very clear point about how the biggest determinant of sales for any brand this year will be determined by the quality and the quantity of ads that ran last year. And I think about that from a challenger perspective as we come out of this crisis. The same will be true, of course, for next year. And it's quite a sobering thought, because if we think about what will be the biggest determinant of sales for any brand in 2021, where we assume the majority of this crisis will be over. And the answer, of course, will be that the biggest determinant will be the quality and the quantity of ads that run this year. So really going back to your point, now is that opportunity to raise, if not the quantity, but certainly the quality of communications, and accept that it might not solve the situation that we're in right now, but it does make everything for 2021 up for grabs.
Wonderful. And it leads us quite nicely, actually, into the subject for the next podcast, which is entitled How Much is Enough? So we'll be joined by Kerry Chilvers of Direct Line Group, an insurance company, talking about when they represented themselves to their customers, how much substance behind the communication, behind the new attitude, did they need to have in place? And how did they galvanize the organization through their communication to create more substantiation as they went and transform the culture as well as the consumer relationship? So that's going to be the next podcast with Kerry Chilvers, and we'll be joined by Hugh Cameron from PhD as well. And that's it from us. Thank you very much indeed, Malcolm.
It's been lovely spending time with you again, Adam, even if virtually, and look forward to next time, hopefully in person.